How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 75 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head onto iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. And you can leave a review once you're there also, and find us on audioboom.com too. Log on to normantranscript.com and check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site for more Thunder coverage. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday, so you can get me after games. This is obviously a game preview, big one tonight against the Clippers. Big one the next night against, you may have heard of them, the Golden State Warriors. So a huge back-to-back for the Clippers coming up. I'm doing this one from my hotel room in L.A. right now. So I'll be at that game on Wednesday night, and then I'll be up in Oakland for the game on Thursday night before I head back to Oklahoma City on Friday. So travel-packed week, but man, it's going to be fun. Clippers are really good. Warriors are really good. The Thunder made a trade. Weird timing for a trade. Super weird. Like, it's not even that the actual trade is weird, just the timing. Three games into the season? Strange. Strange time for a trade, yet the Thunder made a trade with the Philadelphia 76ers. They're receiving Jeremy Grant. Jeremy Grant, whose name is really, really frustrating. I feel like I'm going to need to put Jeremy Grant into my phone, like into my phone contacts, even though I don't have his phone number, just so autocorrect will stop correcting the spelling of his name to normal, the conventional spelling of Jeremy. Because every time I type in J-E-R-A-M-I, it changes to Jeremy in the conventional spelling, and it kills me. So I might have to put him into my phone contacts and just not give him a phone number. Anyway, they got Jeremy Grant, and they traded Ersan Ilyasova and a protected first-round pick, which will probably be a 2020 first-round pick. There are certain ways it could be a 2022 first-round pick. Top 20 protected. If they don't convey that to Philadelphia, it turns into two second-rounders. So, interesting timing for a trade. I couldn't tell you why this trade was made this week and not before the season. Honestly, I couldn't tell you exactly why that is the case. Probably has something to do with negotiating process, but I don't know. Because it is weird timing for a trade. I don't know why it happened, you know, on the exact day that it happened. But I think I see the logic in the trade that was made. You know, the Thunder had a surplus of big men. They've got Cantor, they've got Adams, they've got Sabonis, they've got LaVerne, they had Ilyasova. Ilyasova's a free agent after this year. You know, this is a team that it's not a championship caliber team. So if your goal is to win a championship and it's not a championship caliber team, then, you know, and a guy is going to leave at the end of the year and you have a surplus at his position. Ilyasova gave shooting. I mean, I've written since the beginning, I thought he should be the starting power forward. And I thought he was a good fit next to Adams. And in the short term, you make a good argument he should be the best guy out there. And he certainly helps the team. Like, there are things he does well. He's a really good shooter, no doubt. He's a really good shooting, catch and shoot, pick and pop, four man. For sure. Not going to argue against that. But the argument for this deal is that Jeremy Grant is 22 years old. Jeremy Grant is non-guaranteed for the rest of this year and has a team option for about $1 million next year. So he's super cheap, which means if he, you know, turns into a player, that's a real asset to have on your team. He's a shot-blocking wing, which is hard to find. He's a great athlete. He can guard threes and fours. He can switch on to everybody. You put him on the floor with, you know, you put him on the floor with Andre Roberson, and yeah, you're not going to have a lot of offense. You're not going to have a lot of shooting. You're not going to have a lot of ball handling, but you can switch everything. You can have a really versatile defense. You can have guys who can guard down low. You can have guys who can guard in the perimeter. You're going to have athleticism. You're going to be good in transition. You're going to force turnovers. You're going to be tough to get into the rim. You're going to be tough guarding the perimeter. I mean, this makes them a lot better defensively, I think. There's no question about that. He's certainly a better defensive player than Ersan Ilyasova. But I think this is a team they've talked. Look, it makes sense with the identity that they have talked about, right? They say they want to be a defense-first team. And I thought that they're a defense-first team. From the way that they have to play to the fact that their main identity guys, you know, with Adams and Robertson, if those guys are in your starting lineup, if those guys are playing 30 minutes or in Robertson's case, maybe close to 30 minutes, I think Oladipo is still an above-average defensive player. If those guys are getting a lot of minutes, they're probably going to be a good defensive team. And I think Steven Adams is good enough where if he's playing 34 minutes a night, you're going to be a good defensive team. I think he's good enough to carry a defense now at that point. But if you look at this roster, it's not like there are a ton of plus defenders on the team. It's a weird, it's kind of a weird situation where you have a team that I think is going to be above average defensively, but they arguably have more below average defensive players than they do above average defensive players. This kind of shores that up a little bit because Grant can defend. Grant is a good defensive player and he's got lots of defensive potential. He's a guy who could become an even better defensive player once he integrates into schemes and all that kind of stuff. And it's going to take some time because he's got to learn how to play the way the Thunder play and not the way the 76ers play. Defense is a lot about learning tendencies and schemes and habits and all that stuff. And that takes time. There's no way to shortcut that. But he's got lots of defensive potential. I see it. I understand it. I get it. He's a great athlete. He's good in transition. I'm not sure he starts. I'm not sure that's the case. I think Robertson is still your three. But he's a versatile guy to bring off the bench who can play the three, who can play the four. And if they like Laverne, they traded for Laverne after signing Ilyasova. If they like Laverne, they obviously like Sabonis. He's in the starting lineup. Cantor and Adams are going to get minutes. Someone was going to be the odd man out. You're not going to play five bigs a bunch of minutes. There just aren't enough minutes to go around. You can't do that. You normally play four. And your fourth big isn't even getting an exorbitant amount of minutes anyway. So someone was going to go. It's not shocking that it's the guy who's, you know, 29 years old, the oldest of the group. And it's not shocking that it's the guy who's going to be an unrestricted free agent next year. That's not a shocker to me. The timing of the trade is a shocker. But if you told me that a trade was made, I kind of see this. It makes sense to me. It's kind of intuitive at first. At first, I was like, whoa, just because I didn't expect this trade to happen. I did not have feelers that this was going to happen. Weird time for a trade. It's a weird time for a trade. But once I kind of sat down and thought about it, I was like, okay, this kind of makes sense. This makes sense to me. It makes more sense to me for the Thunder than it does for the Sixers, unless the Sixers just really wanted another pick, which I don't think was the case. They obviously valued Ilyasova to some degree, which is weird to me. I mean, look, if you don't like the trade for the Thunder, it should be based on the pick, not giving up Ilyasova. Because you have to take the long-term view, because that's what this trade is. This trade's about the long-term view. This is a transition year. Don't fool yourself in thinking it's not a transition year. I think they're going to be good this year. I think they're going to be competitive. But something can be a transition year and still be a competitive team. But this is a transition year. This is them trying to get back to a level of greater competition than, you know, 45 wins and a bottom four playoff seed. This is them trying to get back to that level. And they obviously think Jeremy Grant is someone who can be a part of something moving forward. Whether that means him as a role player or in a bigger position than that, you know, it doesn't matter. That's irrelevant to the conversation. They think he can be a part of something. And Ersan Ilyasova wasn't necessarily going to be a part of the future. He was a part of right now. And that's the logic. If they should take the long-term view in a transition year. That's the point of a transition year, right? That's what it is by definition. You're transitioning to something else, which is going to come in the future. So I understand it. Sam Presti's always prioritized having a team with guys on the same timeline. Makes sense. It makes sense to me. I get it. If you have a problem with it, then if you just don't like the principle of giving up a first-round pick, even if it's top 20 protected, even if it's something that could potentially turn into two second-rounders in 2022 and 2023, okay, that's fine. I buy that argument. That's cool. I don't think it's a huge issue if it's something that you're going to give up. Because keep in mind, if the Thunder give up that pick to Philly, it means that they're doing well, because it means that their pick is in somewhere in the 21 to 30 range. And if they're doing well, there's a decent chance that Jeremy Grant's doing okay too. So there are ways to justify that. There are ways to justify it. But if you don't like giving up the first round pick, that's okay. I understand that. I get that issue. Let's preview the Clippers game too. So, guys who guard Russ. Let's talk about some guys who are going to guard Russell Westbrook. People think of the Clippers as all offensive. Not true. Clippers were fifth in defense last year. Clippers were really good in defense last year, actually. They got off to a slow start defensively. They were 20-some-odd games into the year. They were in double digits in points allowed per possession in that ranking. Then they put Luke Bamute into the starting lineup. Blake Griffin got hurt around that time, and they put Luke Bamute into the lineup. And all of a sudden, they started shooting up. They finished fifth in points allowed per possession last year. That's defensive efficiency. They were fifth in defensive efficiency last year. This is a good defensive team. Pretty much the exact same team. They signed Ray Felton. They signed Allen Anderson. And they signed Mo Spates. That's it. It's the same team. It's the same team every year with these guys. And you know what? Some people criticize that. I think that's fine. There's something. Like, you can't praise the Mavs for giving it a shot every single year and then finally winning in 2011 with a core that had been together for a long time. You can't praise the concept of continuity and all that stuff and then say, why don't the Clippers blow it up? Because they're winning 55 games every single year. Like, last year they won 53 and Blake was hurt for more than half the season. And when he came back, he was not the same guy. He was clearly playing hurt, and then he got re-injured. So I have no problem with the Clippers going at it. I mean, there are certain moves that they've made, which I have, you know, they've made, which aren't the best. They've had their front office and GMing issues. They've hired a lot of coaches to be in the front office positions. But you know, when you've got a top three point guard, a top three power forward, the center who was first team All-NBA last year, J.J. Redick is one of the best shooters and off-ball cutters and in the entire league. You've got a decent bench. I mean, the bench is fine enough now. A couple years ago, it was really bad, but now it's fine enough. I mean, move forward with that team, regardless of what Golden State's doing. If you aren't the favorites to win a championship, blow it up is a silly mentality to me. I've always thought that was silly. It's not the way to do it. If you've got a chance, if you're second or third or fourth in line to the throne, go for it. Go for it. You can get lucky. Your chances of getting lucky in that scenario are greater than your chances of getting lucky, getting a star in the draft, and then getting back to a championship level. And even if you do get lucky and get a star in the draft, who says that you're going to build to the top? Who says you're not going to be the Pelicans with Anthony Davis? It's just silly. It's a silly way to go about it. It's a silly all-or-nothing mentality that... It's this all or nothing mentality that combines with a grass is greener on the other side mentality, and it's all silliness combined into one. Some keys to the game, and then I'm gonna get out of here. Number one, Thunder. Oh, let's talk about who's gonna guard Russ. So Clippers, good defense, like I said. Chris Paul guards point guards for the most part. But the Clippers have been using him. They've been hiding him a little bit. I think there's a possibility we're going to see Chris Paul get hidden on Andre Robertson a bit. Well, hidden is not quite the right word because it's Chris Paul. He's such a good defensive player that with him, they're not quite hiding him. You're just more resting him. And then Luke Bamute will shift over and guard him. They use Bamute a lot to guard point guards. They'll use him on Lillard. Like, Bamute is an underrated defensive player. People don't talk about him as one of the better perimeter defenders in the league. They should. He doesn't do anything on offense, but he's a really good defensive player. I mean, he's versatile. Like, he will guard a point guard one night, and the next night he'll be guarding Anthony Davis. He is He is amazingly versatile. He's one of the most versatile defensive wings in the league. He deserves more credit for that. But and the Clippers' offense is so good. Those four core guys that I talked about, Paul, Griffin, Jordan, Redick, they're so good that what we've learned is you can put anybody at the small forward spot for them, whether it's him, whether it's Matt Barnes, whether it's Wes Johnson, like whether it's Paul Pierce, it doesn't matter. Like those guys are, that offense is still going to, it's still so difficult to guard. It's still going to be so good no matter who's at the small forward spot. So the Clippers go defense with Bamute. Could hurt him come the playoffs. I said that last year. Could hurt him come the playoffs. But using him to guard point guards, rest Chris Paul a little bit. I think he's going to be on Russell Westbrook a bit. Because why not? Wings tend to guard Russell Westbrook. That's going to be a thing all year when the Thunder don't have a wing who can kind of be a ball-dominant guy and can be a threat. And I think Chris Paul will probably end up guarding him in crunch time, especially if Bamute doesn't play in crunch time. Then you're going to see Chris Paul guarding him. Thunder have to defend the pick and roll. That's this team's bread and butter. Whether it's pick and roll with Blake Griffin, when they run that really high pick and roll, Blake goes one dribble and he can either go straight to the hoop, or you can have Chris Paul keeping the ball and he goes to the right nail and shoots that little 14-foot mid-range jumper. That's a fadeaway that he shoots at literally like 50%. Just a crazy number from mid-range. Whether, you know, Blake gets the ball and now all of a sudden he's got options. He can go to the hoop. He can lob to DeAndre Jordan, which is really one of the prettiest lob plays you're going to see when they go that high pick and roll. Blake goes one dribble and then lobs to DJ over the defense because they come up on Blake. Whether he kicks to shooters in the corner, you just have to guard pick and roll. Whether it's the pick and roll with DeAndre Jordan and Chris Paul, you have to defend against the lob. That's really tough. It's Lob City for a reason. DeAndre Jordan is one of the most... People talk about how he doesn't have offensive value. That's just patently false. He's one of the best screen setters in the entire NBA. He's one of the most active screen setters in the entire NBA. And he's one of the most dangerous roll men in the entire NBA. Like, being able to throw down those lobs, being able to finish as a pick-and-roll guy, there's so much value. And it's not just the points. Like, every single time DeAndre rolls to the hoop, defenders collapse in on him because they're afraid of that lob. They're afraid of getting, you know, a dump-off going to him and DeAndre finishing. Every time. And it opens up shooters. It makes J.J. Redick's job so much easier when, you know, Wes Johnson's in the game. It makes his job so much easier when whoever's playing off the ball, Austin Rivers, like whoever it is, it makes their jobs so much easier because it gets them open shots on the perimeter. That's DeAndre Jordan's offensive value, and it is massive. It's massive for that Clipper offense. They've got a great system, and it helps DeAndre, no question. No question. And having Chris Paul helps him, and having Blake Griffin helps him, there's no doubt about that. But he helps them, too. He helps them a lot. Blake Griffin's going to be a problem. Blake Griffin is definitely going to be a problem. Like, Domantas Sabonis is going to have to guard him right off the spot. He started the first three games. He started all six preseason games. I'm assuming he's going to start tomorrow night. He only played 6 minutes. He's kind of, or 7 minutes the other night. He's kind of a starter in name. But, I mean, look, even if he doesn't guard Griffin the majority of the game, I mean, look, who's going to guard him? I mean, I guess it could be Jeremy Grant. I don't know if Grant is going to be playing on Wednesday. I don't know. But, you know, who's it? If he's not, who's it going to be? Is it going to be Cantor? Is it going to be LaVerne? Is it going to be Sabonis? Or, I mean, is it going to be Robertson? Robertson's kind of small for that. Blake Griffin's a big dude. He'll back him down. Like, there are not a lot of options there. Maybe it ends up being Grant. Maybe you just throw Grant into the fire and put him on Blake Griffin because he's really your best defensive option at the four there. Maybe that's what you do. But Blake Griffin is going to be a tough matchup. Like, whoever he's going up against, that's a mismatch. Chris Paul's great. Chris Paul's amazing, but Chris Paul versus Russell Westbrook obviously is not a mismatch. That's two even players. Two evenly phenomenal first ballot Hall of Famers going up against each other. And Blake Griffin is not going up against an equal counterpart, assuming Adams is going to be guarding DeAndre Jordan. So I don't know what's going to happen with Blake, but that's really the mismatch. And he's become a good shooter, and he's stepping out and shooting threes a little bit now. And That's a tough guard. Even if Sabonis plays kind of the token first 6 minutes, comes out and never goes back, like that's a tough guard for 6 minutes for him. That's a tough cover for him. So I'm curious to see how that's going to happen. They defensively, the matchups here are going to be interesting because the Thunder don't just have to go point guard guards, point guard, shooting guard guards, shooting guard, and so on and so forth. They don't have to do that. Bamute allows them to switch it up. He's kind of their Roberson. So he allows the Thunder to cross match. So what you can do is you can rest Westbrook on Bamute. You don't exhaust him on defense. You can put Oladipo on Chris Paul. And you can put Roberson on J.J. Redick. Now, I think that whether you put Oladipo on Paul or Westbrook on Paul, I think you have to put Roberson on Redick. Redick is so key to their offense. He's become a really good player. Top 10 shooting guard, in my opinion. He's so great moving off the ball. No one moves off the ball like he does. He, like, scampers. He's so good at finding space off the ball. They run floppy sets, like, all the time, like a high school team. They run floppy sets all the time. They'll run them off every type of off-ball screen you can imagine just to try to get him a three. And he's so great at adjusting within the offense and the defense and finding space, getting open, using screens to do it. And obviously, Chris Paul is amazing at finding him. And let's not forget, Blake Griffin is one of the two or three best passing big men in the NBA, along with Draymond Green. Him and Draymond Green, in my opinion, are the two best passing big men in the NBA. And they will find Redick. They will find Redick. And Andre Roberson is your best off-ball defender. He's the best guy. Like, Victor Oladipo is a lot better guarding the ball than he is guarding off the ball. One of his struggles, I think, is when he has to run around off-ball screens and chase a guy. So you play Roberson there. You put Westbrook. Maybe you put Westbrook on Bamute. You rotate him back and forth on Paul and Bamute. And you put Oladipo back and forth on Paul and Bamute. You can get those guys a little bit of rest because Chris Paul's kind of an exhausting cover with all the screens, the DeAndre Jordan screens you got to run into. That's physically exhausting. So you can switch those guys around. I would put Oladipo on Paul a little bit more. I think it kind of accentuates his strengths. He's pretty good on the ball, so just throw him on the ball. We'll see if he listens, but tell him, you know, don't lunge on those screens from behind and try to poke the ball away. You got to stay in front of Chris Paul. If you don't stay in front of Chris Paul on the screen and roll, that's it. You're screwed. It's done. That's done. Once you get behind him and he's got a 4-on-3 or 3-on-2 or 2-on-1, done. There's nothing you can do. Chris Paul, whether it's Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan or Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, those three guys are too good. There's nothing you can do. You got to stay in front of them. That doesn't necessarily mean go under the screen, but you can't do those plays where you try to poke the ball out from behind and end up three steps behind Chris Paul because you made a gamble. You can't do that. So I would have, and Oladipo is prone to doing that. He's a little more solid than Westbrook is on that front. So I'd have Oladipo there. I also think he can get in your chest a little bit more. And he's a little bit bigger and longer than Westbrook is, which could give Chris Paul a tad more trouble. Chris Paul, if he has a flaw, it's that he's not, and this is true for most point guards, true for pretty much every one of them, he's not as good when long defenders guard him. He's not as good. You'll see a lot of long defenders guard him throughout the year, and he's not quite as good. He'll carve up point guards, but he's not quite as good when long guys go up against him. Most point guards are like that. So maybe you go, maybe you try to put Roberson on him at one point, but then you're leaving, you know, then you're probably leaving Redick open at certain moments. So it's tough. They're a tough cover, but the Thunder are going to get creative. They're going to find a way to figure it out. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. You can head on to iTunes and subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. Remember, Thunder Clippers tonight. That's an ESPN game. It is, 9:30 Central Time is when they say they're starting, but those games usually start late, so maybe it'll be 9:45 or something like that. Warriors Thunder is TNT on Thursday night. Also 9:30 supposed start time, but those TNT games don't start till 45 or 50 or something like that. But I'm back with you, Trump, for a Warriors preview, for a Clippers wrap-up, for all that stuff. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
Fashion hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High fashion, Old Navy.
Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.